Today, we're at number 5 of the top 10 episodes of the Couple Money Podcast. Investing can be a tricky subject for many with all the noise out there about what stock's hot or not, or which mutual fund is about to rebound. When I was putting together this episode, my goal was to give you a few principles and resources that could get you set up with investing for retirement, even if you didn't have a lot of money to start off with. Certified financial planner and author Mike Piper was the guest, and I thought he nailed it. No fluff, just a clear and concise explanation of how index investing works. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Couple Money Podcast, where we discuss building up your marriage and your net worth. Here's your host, Elle Martinez.
With retirement seeming so far in the distance and budgets being squeezed, some couples have postponed or taken a break from investing. In this episode, I'll go over how you can get started even if you don't have much time or money. I'll start off with how you can invest with $1,000 or less. I'll speak with Mike Piper, CPA, personal finance author, and the voice behind Oblivious Investor to talk about a low maintenance and effective way of investing. And finally, I'll look into whether or not using a robo-advisor is a practical investing solution. I hope you enjoy. One concern for new investors is knowing where to put your money when you don't have much of it to invest. There are plenty of options today. One of them is investing in index funds or ETFs. With this type of investing, you are simply trying to track whatever benchmark you've chosen, like the S&P 500. Either all or a representative sample of a specific index are purchased for the fund or ETF. Since most of these are automated, you typically pay lower fees than with an actively managed mutual fund. Index funds also have the advantage of giving you a diversified portfolio with one investment, depending on the index you want to track. For those who want to do it themselves, here are a few funds that are fairly diversified and have a low minimum requirement to open an IRA. T. Rowe Price Equity Index 500 Fund has a $1,000 minimum. If you have less money, you might want to try Schwab, their Total Stock Market Index Fund, and S&P 500 Index Funds both have a $100 minimum. Once you've opened up your account and invested in your fund or ETF, you're most likely want to go ahead and set up automatic contributions. It's the easiest way to keep growing your portfolio, and as your financial situation improves, you can increase your contributions. What if, though, you want something a bit more customizable, but still fairly easy to manage? You may want to look at using a robo-advisor such as Betterment. In a later segment, we'll go over what exactly is a robo-advisor, how do they work, and how you can decide if they're the right investing solution for you. But right now, we'll have personal finance author and CPA Mike Piper discuss low-cost and effective index investing. Thank you again for agreeing to do this interview. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Should be fun.
Yes. With Oblivious Investor, I know your motto is investing doesn't have to be complicated.
Yeah.
It's great to get that complexity out of the way, but is index investing really an effective long-term strategy for a couple looking to save for retirement?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. That's where the overwhelming majority of the academic evidence is these days, that indexing is a fantastic way to go for a few reasons. Number one is it's easy to understand the concept of a total stock market index fund, where you just own a small piece of the entire stock market. It's very easy to grasp that concept. Number two is that it's easy to manage, which is to say that with an actively managed mutual fund, for instance, you have to keep an eye on the manager and see how they're doing and try and decide whether they're good performance is likely to continue or so on and so forth. Or if you're picking individual stocks, that's a whole lot of work. Whereas with a basic index fund, it's, again, it's just the whole stock market. You don't have to necessarily do anything with it. You don't have to worry about whether the fund manager is going to do something stupid because they're just tracking an index. So it's, number one, it's easy to understand. Number two, it's less work. And number three, and this is a really critical one, is that it's low cost, which is to say that index funds have low expense ratios relative to other mutual funds. And there's been a number of studies over the last, I guess, about 20 years now, showing that a mutual fund's expense ratio is an excellent predictor of its future performance, which is to say that within a given category of mutual funds, so let's say U.S. stock mutual funds, the lower the fund's expense ratio, the more likely it is to be a top performer. So with index funds having such low expense ratios, they're very likely to be top performers.
I guess with any industry, but especially the financial industry, mm-hmm. Whenever there is a hot buzzword, there's like so many products that are created, and index funds, a lot of people are looking into them. Mm-hmm. How can you find a true index fund that's low cost versus, you know, those that are not quite index, you know, they'll even break it down further and have more fees?
Yeah. There are a few things you can do that really make it easier. Number one is just sticking with companies you've heard of. For instance, Vanguard and Fidelity each have excellent index funds. So that's an easy step to take. Just, you know, there's nothing magical about index funds, which is to say that a good Vanguard index fund is basically going to be almost the exact same thing as the comparable Fidelity index fund. You can get it from either company.
Okay.
So sticking with companies you've heard of certainly helps. But a second point is that it's really easy to look up a fund's expense ratio. You can just do a Google search for the ticker symbol for the fund and the word Morningstar, and you'll find the Morningstar page for the fund, which tells you a whole lot of information, including many, many things that you don't really need to worry about. But right there at the top of the page, it tells you the fund's expense ratio. So you're looking for, I mean, lower is better. But you don't have to worry about, for instance, if, you know, Vanguard's index fund costs 0.05% and Fidelity's is 0.06% per year. That difference is so small that, you shouldn't really worry about it.
You have been a financial advisor and a tax accountant. Mm-hmm. Have you always felt this way about index investing?
No. When I was working as a financial advisor, I was working for Edward Jones, which is a company that is actually very much on the other side of the active investing versus passive investing debate. They're big proponents of actively managed mutual funds. Mm-hmm. But as I, learned more and more about the topic and did more and more research, it became pretty clear to me that most of the unbiased sources, so people who don't have a financial interest in convincing you of one thing or another, mm-hmm. they're overwhelmingly in favor of using low-cost funds. Typically, that does mean index funds.
I'm thinking of a couple that, you know, they've saw the research, and they do agree that they want to start with or build a portfolio with index funds. Mm-hmm. What questions should they be asking themselves when they're trying to figure out their research strategy? I mean, their investment strategy. Say they're going to work with their with a Roth IRA. Okay. Just starting off with, you know, there's so many choices. How mm-hmm. do they know what kind of portfolio?
Well, that's an interesting thing about asset allocation, which is the term for how to pick what things you want to include in your portfolio, basically, is that for any given person, there are functionally an unlimited number of portfolios that would be perfectly reasonable. If anyone tries to tell you that they know exactly the right portfolio for you, either A, they're just not very well informed, or B, they're about to try and sell you something. So the overall goal is to just try and figure out what level of risk you're comfortable with. The most important question with regard to that is, how much of your portfolio do you want in stocks, and how much of it do you want to have in fixed income, which is to say bonds and CDs and things like that. And there's no very rigorous, perfect way to get the exact right answer there. I think a pretty basic and pretty decent rule of thumb is to ask yourself, how much could my portfolio value go down before I started to completely freak out? And limit your stock allocation to twice that number, which is to say, assume that your stocks can lose 50% of their value at any time, and then don't hold more stocks than you can afford to. So for instance, if you think that the biggest portfolio decline that you could tolerate would be a 30% decline, well, then I wouldn't suggest holding more than 60% of your portfolio in stocks. So that's step one, is just figure out the overall stock bond allocation. And then from there, there's the question of, okay, well, how much of the portfolio do you want in the U.S. and how much do you want internationally? And then there's a million other little questions that you can get into if you want to. Like, do you want to have small cap value stocks or large cap stocks and so on and so forth? But most people really don't need to worry about that. For most people, just a few index funds gets the job done. Just a U.S. stock index fund, an international stock index fund, and a bond index fund. That's going to be plenty for most people. It's thoroughly diversified. A portfolio like that would include thousands of stocks from around the world, a whole bunch of different bonds. It's got all the important pieces that you need.
Great. And it seems like it's easy to manage.
It is.
And this is just my personal experience and, you know, talking with friends. Mm-hmm. As people, we have like this tendency to kind of tinker with stuff with our investments. You know, we say, okay, I'm going to do these investments. And you see the news, mm-hmm. and you're like, should I do something? Should I start moving investments around? What's your advice for couples? Like, how often maybe should they check their portfolio? How should they avoid the noise, I guess?
Yeah. There's a few things here to take note of. Number one, I don't think it's important to check your portfolio all that often. I think once a month is plenty. You know, once a month, if you have to do your retirement account contributions manually, for instance. But if you have it set up so that, you know, it's a 401k contribution that comes directly out of your paycheck, or if it's you have automated investing in your Roth IRA where they just automatically take a certain amount out of your checking account every month and put it into the funds that you ask them to, then I don't think you even need to check it once a month. I think literally just a handful of times a year is plenty. Because the only thing you're really trying to do when you check it is just make sure your asset allocation hasn't gotten terribly out of whack. So for instance, if the stock market went up a whole lot, and now, remember, if we had decided that, let's say, a 60% stock allocation was appropriate for you, and now, oh my goodness, your portfolio is 85% in stocks, well, then maybe it's time to scale it back, sell mm-hmm. some of those stock holdings, and it's called rebalancing, where you just bring your portfolio back to the intended asset allocation. And sometimes that means selling stocks to buy bonds. Other times it means selling bonds to buy stocks.
And I was wondering if you could take listeners through your book, Investing Made Simple, like some of the major topics that you cover in it.
Well, it's really what we're talking about right now. Just kind of talking about what the basic things are. What's a stock? What's a bond? What's a mutual fund? And then what is an index fund and how does that differ from an actively managed fund? And then talking about why index funds tend to be a better choice. And that's just what we talked about, which is to say that they have lower costs, which makes them, on average, likely to perform better. The book also talks a little bit about ETFs. It stands for exchange-traded funds, which are essentially the same thing as index funds, except that you buy and sell them like individual stocks. So for instance, at Vanguard, all of their index funds have both a regular index fund version and an ETF version. And they're basically the same thing. It's just a sort of personal preference. Do you rather... with ETFs, since they trade like individual stocks, you can buy and sell them during the day. So if that's an important thing to you, then you might prefer to use ETFs. But you can't, for instance, set up automated investing with ETFs with most brokerage firms. So if you prefer to be able to do automated investing, index funds are a better fit. So it's really not a huge difference between the two. It's just kind of a personal preference. Then the book gets into basically some common errors that investors make. One, which is what you talked about, which is paying too much attention to the news, and then making, you know, letting it get you scared, letting it worry you that you need to be doing something different with your portfolio, when most of the time the answer is really just do nothing, stick to the plan. How to find a good financial advisor if you want to use one, talks about that. That's pretty much the gist of it.
Well, I've read several of your books, including, you know, Can I Retire and Accounting Made Simple, and you've always done a fantastic job just breaking things down and just having that data right there to grab. Yeah. So thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you.
I guess, you know, there's so many new companies with investing in the last few years. A lot of also, like, they call them robo-advisors. And
right, these, yeah.
Do you think that's a practical option, or are there certain things that you think couples or, you know, any investor should be aware of with them?
I do think it's a practical option. They are generally going to involve lower overall costs than a lot of other investing methods would, because for the most part they use index funds and they charge an assets under management fee in addition to the fees charged by the index funds, but typically those assets under management fees are relatively low. And they are very simple passive portfolios, which is just like we talked about, they just rebalance them periodically for you. I will say, however, that I think another option that is also quite good in terms of being easy to deal with, and it's usually even lower cost than these so-called robo-advisors, is just to use a low-cost target retirement fund. It's the same sort of goal, essentially. It achieves the same goal, rather, which is to say it's a portfolio that rebalances itself for you. And so Vanguard's target retirement funds are excellent. So are their, they call them life strategy funds, which are basically like target retirement funds, except they don't change allocation over time. Fidelity has their Fidelity Freedom Index funds are excellent. So I think that's another excellent low-cost way to go. And in fact, it typically ends up being less expensive than using one of the robo-advisors. That said, I think the robo-advisors tend to be a perfectly reasonable option.
Finally, you know, we were talking about investing in IRAs. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do have the option for 401ks, but not all 401ks have index
right.
funds as an option. Are there some guidelines maybe couples can keep in mind when they decide what they're going to invest in?
I think there's a few things here to know. Number one is it's not necessarily important for every one of your accounts to be diversified. It's only important that your overall portfolio is diversified. So, for instance, one thing that's pretty common is that a 401k plan might have one single index fund, and it's an S&P 500 index fund. So, okay, great, but that's not a whole portfolio because you also need some international stocks and you need some bonds. But depending on the overall allocation that you're looking for and depending on the size of all your different accounts, it might be possible to say, okay, in this 401k, I'm just going to use that low-cost S&P 500 index fund, and then I'll use my Roth IRA or my spouse's Roth IRA, or if your spouse also has a 401k, your spouse's 401k, to pick up the other pieces of the puzzle. But there are even still sometimes where there's just no index funds at all, nothing particularly low cost, in which case typically the approach is, again, figure out the overall asset allocation you want for your whole portfolio and then just figure out the lowest cost way to do it. So what of the funds that your 401k does have, look at their expense ratios and find the lowest ones and then try and use those for whatever part of your portfolio they work for, and then use your other accounts like IRAs or your spouse's 401k, again, if there is one, to pick up the other pieces, basically.
At its core, robo-advisors offer investors portfolio management that reduces the need for more traditional financial advisors. Some of the big names in the business right now are Betterment, Wealthfront, and Future Advisor. By automating some of the process and eliminating the middleman, these companies can offer the services at a relatively small cost. In many cases, they build a recommendation for your portfolio based on you filling out an interview-style assessment. They take into account your age, your risk level, and your time horizon. This is not a solution for everyone, but it can be a practical one for couples who have a basic understanding of investments, want low fees, and want an uncomplicated low-maintenance option. Having said that, not all robo-advisors are created equal. When choosing one that is best suited to manage your money, you too have to consider such factors as what services do they offer? Asset allocation, automatic rebalancing, tax harvesting? What fees do they charge? While less fees is great, make sure the quality of service doesn't suffer with it. You have to look at control. Do you want to keep your assets with the company, or do you prefer to keep them where they are and the company simply tracks it? Customer service. Do you want a completely automated service, or would you like a human to check in from time to time on your portfolio? We ourselves use Betterment for my husband's IRA and have been very happy with him. You, though, may have different needs. I'm going to have a list up of some of the most popular and well-reviewed companies in the show notes so you can analyze them for yourselves. Thank you for listening. I hope to have more shows covering different investment options. Please let me know what you think and if you have any questions you'd like to have covered in a future episode. If you haven't already, please take a minute today to leave a rating and review for their show. Subscribing to the podcast is free and easy, plus you'll be getting the latest episodes as they're released. We're available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. The feed is also on the site, so you can grab it on whatever service you prefer. If you enjoyed the show, could you tweet out or share on Facebook your favorite episode? I'd love to see which ones matter the most to you. Until next time, take care.